Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop 5. Hello, I'm Irene Watson, and I am your host for today. I am so delighted to be speaking to you on the phone all the way from Australia to Paul Karitsis, and he is the author of the award-winning book, Hermetica, Myths, Legends, Poems, and it is published by iUniverse. But before we go on and talk to Paul, I would like to just talk a little about him. And what he tells us is he was born on July the 15th in 1979 under the protective lap of the Cancerian sky. Paul Curtis Carizis was born in a jewel called Melbourne Terra Australis. Wow, that just sounds so far out there. At the age of 26, he can say that only now does he feel he has started to come into his own. With a background in behavioral sciences and arts, the cosmos within the human mind and the ways of which it defines itself are what interest him the most. Within academic study, his favorite areas are mythology, theosophy, history, philosophy, and English literature. And of course, you will find that this really comes out in his book, Hermetica. And Paul has completed degrees in behavioral sciences and professional writing. So he certainly comes from a lot of background, too, in his work. Eventually, he does hope to continue into his PhD program in English, and we wish him definitely the best of luck in that. Hermetica, Myths, Legends, Poems marks his first literary collection, and his interests outside of academic era are plentiful, that's for sure. He is fitness instruction, body sculpting, music, thrill-seeking, wow, traveling, and meeting people that are seductive, and they come from all walks of life. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Irene. How are you?
Great. I'm so glad to have you online. Gosh, and all the way from Australia.
It's nice to be speaking with you.
Great. Well, first of all, I want to talk about Hermetica, and it's a literary collection, and from what I understand, it focuses on mythology and ancient Egypt. So tell us a little bit more so that our listening audience can just really get it, their mind wrapped around what it is that your book is about.
There are quite a few things that actually come into the book. Well, one of them is, first and foremost, I guess it's about literature, so it's about folklore, and specifically ancient folklore. So a lot of the book deals with a lot of the ancient folklore, which actually came out of ancient Egypt, which a lot of, you know, our modern audiences don't actually know that much about. So the main focus is the folklore, but there are other things that actually come into the book as well. Like there's a lot of philosophy, mythology, theosophy, if you like. When I first started writing the book, I'd write a story there, a story there, a story there, and then I kind of realized that the whole thing was actually tied in. You know, what was being tied in through my actual love for Egypt, and how the actual idea came about is that I'm really into mythology, so I've read a lot on Greek mythology, you know, Egyptian mythology. I've even done a bit of reading on kind of like the Mesoamerican mythologies as well, like, you know, Inca Mayan mythology. But the type of mythology that's actually interests me the most is Egyptian mythology. And as I was reading through these myths, I came to realize that a lot of these stories had holes in them, basically. So you'd have something would happen over there, and then there'd be a huge gap of time, and then something else would happen. So all their myths are kind of disjointed. And what I tried to do is that I tried to actually join the myths together, and that's what a lot of the book actually deals with. So, you know, in ancient Egypt, we have this framework of myths which are really disjointed. They're actually, you know, you can tell that there was more literature coming from the country at one stage. So because most of it would have been spoken, it wouldn't have been written down. a lot of it's actually been lost. You know, say even their greatest myth, which is about the myth of Isis and Osiris, which is the central myth of their religion, wasn't actually written down. It was actually told, say, you know, like it was passed down by word of mouth, and the first time that we as Western civilization hear of it is perhaps, I guess, in late antiquity, in about 300, 400 BC, and that was through a Greek writer. So that's the main focus of the book is ancient Egyptian folklore.
Well, it's certainly timely, I think, Paul, too, because it seems that people are starting to get back interested in it again. And you know, you mentioned Theosophy, and of course, I believe that was like in the late 1800s. That was it, Blavatsky? I just forgot her name.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
that's
right.
That, you know, sort of brought that to light, and it was certainly untimely at that time, but and then it sort of faded off. But it seems that people are getting more and more interested in Theosophy, and of course that brings to mind a lot of you know, subjects that come under that. So my interest in you, being that you're interested in Theosophy and also the interest in ancient Egypt, do you believe that you were at one time in ancient Egypt, and this is why the connection is still there?
Ah, you mean as in, like, are we talking about reincarnation?
That's what we're talking about, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's where my mind went. It's actually, reincarnation is actually, it's actually a really, really ancient idea. One of the first instances where we hear of it from Western society is through Hermetica, which is, my book's called Hermetica, but Hermetica is also the name of an ancient theosophical text. And it was attributed to a mythical figure called Hermes Trismegistus, who was part Egypt, well, the, you know, kind of part Egyptian, part Greek. So he's kind of like a cross between the Egyptian Hermes, oh sorry, the Egyptian Thoth and the Greek Hermes. And that book contains with it like a wealth of I guess theosophical knowledge. And kind of like you read through and you think, oh wow, this is quite amazing for people of that time to be coming up with ideas like that. And so the first instance of reincarnation that we have is from Western society, because we know that it exists in the Eastern religions of, you know, Buddhism and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But in the West, it first actually comes up in Hermetica. And I think it's in a chapter called The Mixing Bowl in Hermetica. And there's a reference to reincarnation in that, you know, you need to live many lives so that you can, you know, so that you can perfect yourself. And once you perfect yourself, you actually stop coming back. Well, yeah, that is an idea that's actually interested me a lot. And I have thought a lot about reincarnation, mm-hmm. As you might imagine. So it's just kind of funny that you say that, because that's one of the things that I've actually been thinking a lot about lately. You know, the fact that, you know, after you live one life, you learn something, then your soul actually goes back to that kind of astral source, and then will return again when it's time to live another life and to learn future lessons. Well, notion is actually it comes up a lot in a lot of my stories as well. So.
So Paul, are these you're talking about coming back and into lifetimes to learn lessons? Do you feel that your writing, Hermetica, are lessons that you have to learn in this lifetime?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, there comes a stage in your life, like, you know, like, I think people go through phases. You know, what I found with myself was that I kind of went through a really materialistic phase, and then, you know, I kind of thought, oh, well, this isn't really doing it for me anymore. And, you know, there comes a stage where you're buying this, you're buying that, and, you know, you feel empty. You don't feel like you need a sense of purpose, a sense of existence. You know, a sense of purpose to feel that you're doing something in life, or that, you know, your life means something. And I guess there comes a stage where you find that. And I think I found that through studying, you know, these philosophical texts and that hope that there is some sort of continuation into a next world, and that, you know, that you will eventually reincarnate, and that you will come back, and that you won't be lost. I guess it's that hope. And I do kind of feel that if, you know, if such a thing exists, that I have lived a past life and I have lived it in Egypt, because, you know, like, even from, I guess, from childhood, I used to see, like, pictures and of ancient Egyptian artifacts and, you know, ancient Egypt on documentaries and say, oh, I'm pretty sure I've been there before. So it's kind of like a kind of feeling that you've, you know, that you've been there, and that it's kind of like, you can't really describe it, it's something that just comes from within. You know, sort of that thing, oh, I know, I've been there. So, and there's actually a really interesting, there's a really interesting biography that's actually been written about a woman called Dorothy Eady.
Oh, yeah.
And she was an English woman, I believe, and she was actually, or she proclaimed to have been one of the temple maidens who was living during the time of Seti the First, I believe, and who was one of his lovers. And she claimed that every night he would visit her, and they would have romantic encounters and things like that. And at one stage, I think she actually went to Abydos, which is where the Temple of Seti is built. And she kind of shocked many archaeologists, because wherever the archaeologists would dig, she would say, oh, this is what you're going to find under there, and this is what you're going to find under there. And it's really, really weird, because they would find what she would actually tell them that they were looking for. So yeah, like, things like that basically just, you know, make you think, oh, wow. Yeah,
been there, done that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And there's plenty of books that have been written on reincarnation. And there's a lot of, you look at, you know, in today's market, I think that there's a lot of really dodgy things out there as well, like people that are out there to make money off this off reincarnation, because, you know, like, this, especially the area of mind, body, spirit, it's a very popular area, and, you know, you've got, it's kind of like this spiritual awakening in the 21st century. Everyone wants, you know, everyone wants their life to be meaningful, and, you know, everyone wants to believe it. So you kind of have people just buying everything on reincarnation, and so you need to learn to separate the good material from the kind of the dodgiest stuff, because there's a lot of people that are just out there to make money, and you need to kind of be able to tell what feels right and what doesn't feel, and then pick. So, because I've read a lot of, you know, a lot of things, a lot of material on reincarnation where I think, that doesn't feel right, especially when someone who's recalling a past life experience is saying, you know, in 1655, BC, well, how would a person living in 1655 BC be able to recall that date when they actually counted in renal years in the past? So they would count with the years of the life of the king or the queen. So renal year 1, renal year 10, renal year 20, they didn't have that notion of, they didn't know, you know, we kind of have a, our timeline's more kind of Christian-based, where we say, oh, yeah, you know, 50 BC, 50 years before Christ, 100 years before Christ. So, they didn't have that. So how would someone living at that time know that they were living in 1550 BC, right?
Yeah, I agree. I agree very much so, Paul. So you had mentioned earlier that, you know, a lot of the myths have been lost. Why do you think that this, over time, a lot of them have been lost?
From my reading of Egyptian myths, I believe that a lot of them have been lost because, you know, primarily because they actually weren't written down. So I think you'll find that with a lot of ancient Egyptian culture, a lot of things, it was a very esoteric culture, meaning that they kept their greatest mysteries secrets, and most of these secrets were actually kept by the temple priests. So the temple priests of, say, Heliopolis or Memphis or Thebes would actually store, keep the secrets and store them, and usually it was, they wouldn't be written down anywhere, so they would be passed on by word of mouth. And I feel that a lot of the times, because they were passed on by word of mouth, a lot of the times the stories actually changed. It's a bit like Chinese whispers, you know, you tell one person one thing and then the other person hears it, and it, you know, by the end it's gone down 10 people and it's changed. The version is completely different to the original one. So it was a lot of that. It was very unlike, I guess, Greek myth, and I guess the later Aztec and Inca myths, because, say, with Greek mythology, say, the Greek world did come to the forefront at one stage, like in 300 BC, Alexander the Great conquered the known world, and therefore disseminated Greek culture to the known world. And with that, he disseminated Hellenistic mythology, you know, which is why everyone knows the stories of the Trojan horse and, you know, the Odyssey and the Iliad, and everyone knows Theseus and the Minotaur, and Jason and the Argonauts, and Perseus and Medusa. They're stories that are kind of like universally known, or, you know, amongst, you know, especially people in the Western world. Whereas stories like the contendings of Horus and Seth, and, you know, the love story between Isis and Osiris, they're kind of the lesser known, they're lesser known myths, because the culture, or Egypt, didn't really disseminate its culture to the known world. Our knowledge of those stories actually comes through the Greek and Roman world, the writers who wrote about these Egyptian myths that were living in the Greek and Roman world. So that's how those stories were actually passed down to us, obviously not in full form. So that's basically what I would put it down to.
Sure.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. We are speaking today with award-winning author Paul Kiritsis about his recently published book, Dramatica, Myths, Legends, and Tones. I was just in Greece recently, and, you know, I always thought these were myths, too, and had some interest in them. And after being in Greece and seeing the architecture that's left there and, you know, the hearing the stories that go back, and then I started questioning, and I haven't answered this, and maybe you can get this a little clear for me, and I'm sure there are listeners that also have the same question. Are they really myths, or do we just call them myths? Was this really a reality of that particular era?
I think, you know, especially with people like Homer, who was obviously one of Greece's greatest ancient poets, there's actually a recent study that actually said, oh, well, maybe it wasn't, Homer didn't actually exist at all. Maybe it was a school of poets that were writing under the name of Homer, and that's how the Odyssey and the Iliad, you know, two great poetic works were actually created. Anyway, that's a different story. But my take on it is that especially with, because the corp of Greek myths actually, when we mean Greek myths, we're talking about ancient myths, we're not talking about, because Greece has a huge history, and not only that, it has a lot of modern folklore as well. So we need to kind of differentiate between ancient and modern folklore. Now, with Greece's ancient mythology, a lot of that was actually, told by Homer in the Odyssey and the Iliad. And what he was doing was he was recounting historical events.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, say with the Siege of Troy, that actually did happen, but it didn't happen the way he actually told it. Like, it didn't happen because Helen, you know. Yeah, exactly. Like, the war didn't happen because of one woman.
Mm-hmm.
Helen, it happened because of, you know, the battle was kind of primarily for land. It was kind of like a land. It was a dispute, you know, between the two parties for land. It wasn't because, you know, Helen did what she did. But yeah, so there's historical elements in mythology. but I guess kind of they've kind of been propped up. Like there's kind of fictional elements added to them, I'd say. So I mean, you know, you can't imagine that something like I guess Theseus and the Minotaur can't have been a creature that would have existed, but you know, like it might have been a symbol for something else. So I guess mythology can be interpreted in many different ways. There's kind of like you've got a Jungian interpretation, a psychological interpretation of them. You've got, you know, a more sociological interpretation of mythology. You can have a literal interpretation of mythology as well. So different people interpret mythology in different ways, which is what is so amazing about it.
Mm-hmm. What is your favorite myth?
My favorite myth?
Yeah.
I would have to say, well, my favorite myth of all would probably be Theseus and the Minotaur.
And tell us about the myth.
I've been fascinated by that story from a very early age.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's actually one of Greece's oldest myths. It's actually, the myth actually comes from Crete, which is Greece's motherland, or the kind of where Greek civilization actually sprung from.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Minoan, especially the Greeks credit the Minoan civilization as being the birth of their civilization, even though there's a strong argument that the Minoans weren't actually Greek. They actually didn't speak Greek, nor did they write in Greek. But the Greeks like to credit the Minoans as being their ancestors. So, and it's an absolutely fascinating myth because, of course, that's where the myth of the labyrinth comes from. You know, you've got everyone knows the labyrinth and the symbolism of the labyrinth. And you know, the origins of that is in Crete with the story of Theseus and the Minotaur. So, and it's a very, very old tale. And you know, it's funny hearing these myths being told in Greece, you know, these days. Everyone kind of tells it with a different dramatic twist. You know, the Greeks are really good at dramatizing everything. But that's definitely my favorite myth.
Oh, that's great. Well, there's certainly a lot of them out there. So, Paul, when I talked to you earlier, before we started this interview,
yep.
asked if you had something that you can read out of your book, and you said you do. So maybe this is a great time to read out of your book, whatever you chose to.
Sure. Yeah, I'm going to read one of my poems.
Okay.
And this poem, it's called The Philosophy of Magic.
The Philosophy of Magic?
Yeah, The Philosophy of Magic.
All right. Go for it.
Okay. Deep inside the musty corner of a wardrobe, I found a rare silk whose stitching screamed of hermetic philosophy. And with spells deemed worthy by the heart of every true magician, I discarded the routine worth of polyester in the back pocket of a newly sewn pair of jeans. Deep inside the night hours of mystery, I rediscovered a frail recipe of sleep dreamt by Asclepius millennia before, and mixed together the silky ingredients of magic, plants of consciousness, stones of reason, and spices of knowledge, which melted together under fires fed by the fuel of what is and what is yet to be. Deep inside the mixing bowl of chance, I dared to deceive the mind of God by secretly dropping bitter oranges and sour cherries into the boiling pot, ones I plucked from your yet-to-ripen lips. Deep inside the fiery furnace of earth, I let the heat coagulate them into a syrupy sugar, which I then scooped up in puffy spoonfuls to feed the furies of fate, softening the sharp tongue of a mouth pregnant with coming to be. So that's that.
All right. Wow. You know, I was sitting here listening to you with my eyes closed, and this poem is so descriptive, and I was just able to get right into it. So I know that our listeners that are interested in this type of work will certainly find your book a real plus, because your writing skills are fantastic. And I also understand that you won several awards for it too, so congratulations.
Oh, thank you. It's written in a style, like I guess, even the way it's actually laid out, like it's separated into seven sections. Now, the first six of them, of course, are all poetry. I've got like a section called Alchemica, Astrologica, Mythologica, Philosophica, Musica, and Erotica. And then the last section is the myths and legends, and of course, they're stories that really can't be found anywhere else. I've actually invented these stories.
Oh.
So, yeah, so basically they, or the myths, excuse me, so I've invented the myths, and what a lot of the myths do is that they bridge, as I was telling you before, they actually bridge the Egyptian myths so that, you know, once you you read them and, you know, you know a bit of Egyptian mythology, you say, ah, oh, that's, you know, this is this and this is that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's not only Egyptian myth in there. I've incorporated a lot of Greek mythology in there. There's pieces in there that are very philosophical, very kind of theosophical. So that what the book is meant to do, it's meant to kind of make you think about I guess the place of humans in the universe, and it's learning about thinking kind of divergently, thinking about things in from many different angles, not to think convergently, thinking divergently. So, you know, what I want people to see is that, look, you can see one thing from that angle, but you can also see it from that angle and from that angle. It's about putting yourself in other people's shoes. I think that's what writers are generally good at doing, is kind of positioning themselves in other people's shoes and seeing things from different perspectives. So, and I think that's essential for personal growth and transformation. So, and that of course goes back to the whole idea of reincarnation and why we're actually here. So, understanding is one of the main themes of the book, being able to understand other people.
Well, and it's so, the main point in life too. Is,
exactly.
You know,
that's
creating
exactly
relationships.
Right. So,
understanding other people, and of course that then brings back to ourselves, if we understand ourselves first, we can understand others.
Certainly, yeah, that's the way it goes. And I mean, there's other little, you know, subtle things in the book, like you know, like it's divided into seven sections. Of course, you know, you've got your seven days of the week, like there's a lot of symbolism going on in the book, and you kind of have to sit down and kind of think about each story and about each poem. There's layers. It's very layered. The book is very layered. So, you won't get everything you can out of it with one reading. I think it's about going back and kind of dissecting, if you like, dissecting the poems and the stories that are in the book. Because I think that, you know, it's pretty loaded with different philosophies.
Mm-hmm. It's a deep book. It's definitely a deep book. Gosh, Paul, you know, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, and I'm just thrilled that you were able to phone us from all the way from Australia, and I know the time difference and, you know, the coordination, but it worked. And at this time, how about telling our listening audience your website address?
Yes, certainly. I can be found at www.paulkiritsis.com.
I'm going to spell this P-A-U-L, Paul Kiritsis. K-I-R-I-T as in Tom, S as in Sam, I as in India, S as in Sam.com, PaulKiritsis.com.
That's correct.
You know, as I say, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you and just to talk about your book, but also not only that, get deeper into your own life too and learn more about you as the author and what your thoughts are. And someday I want to just really be able to sit down with you and talk about theosophy, because that's certainly my interest too. And I just find that fascinating. So it's just been a real, real pleasure to
It's been a real pleasure talking to you too. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to talk about my book and about other issues with you.
Well, you know, it's all getting to know each other, isn't it? And so I'd like to remind our listening audience at this time that you can actually link to Paul's author's page on Inside Scoop Live to purchase Chromatica through Amazon.com. But you can also go to his website, as he had mentioned earlier, paulkiritsis.com, PaulKiritsis.com. And I was on his website, and I'll tell you, listeners, there's a lot of stuff on it. It's a very interesting website, and he's got a way to connect to him. So if you're interested in this and want to learn more about myths and legends, and I'm sure Paul would be there available for you. So thanks again for listening. This is Irene Watson. I've been your host for today. Bye for now.